Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is letting go of the habit of self-improvement. And the number to call to talk to me about, well, hell, whatever you want to talk to me about is 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Or from outside of the U.S. and Canada, you can dial 001-760-918-4300. And before I get to your calls and questions and whatever else you may want to bring, let me speak to this particular topic. So this topic is one of the three sort of themes of an upcoming program I'm doing called the Advanced Course. And it's a somewhat tongue-in-cheek title. This is the third time I've run it, and it's proven to be our most popular online program. And it's essentially a three-week exploration of the principles behind the stuff that I talk about and do on this show each week and in my coaching and in my books. And if you're interested, go to michaelneal.org/advanced, and I think there are about 15 places left. It's about $100, somewhere in that region. And if you want to join us for that, please do. But I wanted to take time on air to kind of just explore the basics of the topic, and where it came from for me, this idea of letting go of the habit of self-improvement, is I was teaching in Portland, Oregon. And my partner in crime, Barb Patterson, who I was working with, started talking about how she had noticed that there was a habit of thought that she had, where any time she would learn something, any time she would see something, she'd want more. Okay, yeah, so okay, that's good, but how can I get even more of it? Or that was helpful. How can I be even more helped? Or oh, I did that well. How can I do even better? And there was a kind of a perpetual discontent with what is. And while on the one hand, that seems almost like a good thing because, well, if I wasn't, you know, discontented, then I would just settle and I would just not learn anything and I would just not change and I would just not grow, etc., etc., etc. The reality is the opposite. That when we make our peace with how we are as we are in the moment, we automatically evolve. It would be like a kid thinking that they won't grow up unless they do something, right? So your five-year-old's going, man, I really want to be big like the big people. What do I do? Let me go get some books. Does Hay House have any books on how to grow as a person, literally? Right? Well, no, if you were with that kid, you would kind of counsel them, hey, kid, you don't have to worry about it. It's built into the system. You are designed to grow. And there's really not that much you can do to stop it. And there's really not much you can do to make it happen quicker. I mean, people do try. Like, I don't know if you ever went through this in adolescence, but I know people who literally hung by their feet hoping to stretch to get taller faster, right? From like a gravity bar. Well, that's kind of cool and cute and fun, but the reason they got taller wasn't hanging from the gravity bar. It's because we're made to grow physically up to a certain point. Well, we're made to grow into ourselves, to grow in consciousness, to evolve forever. You know, one of my colleagues talks about it as being halfway up an infinite ladder, that no matter how far we go, we never really get anywhere because there's not an end result. We just keep growing. And we grow in spite of whatever we do to try and make ourselves grow. We grow regardless of whether we do anything or not to make ourselves grow. That's just the beauty of the system. It's already designed for us to thrive. And ironically, the one way we kind of get in our own way is by trying to do mechanically what is natural. By trying to make ourselves grow through techniques and applications and strategies and practices. And then when we do grow, we credit it to our practice. And when we don't notice ourselves growing, we think it's because we're doing the wrong practice or not enough practice. Which again would be like a kid kind of going, well, I've only grown an inch in the last year. Clearly something's wrong. I need to look at my diet. I need to look at my exercise. I need to look at this. When again, it's just, we don't time the growth spurts, right? Sometimes it doesn't look like much is happening at all. And then all of a sudden you shoot up over the summer and you're 6 inches taller than you were and your voice dropped. If you're a boy, I don't know if women's voice drop in that way. But physically, we can see it's natural. Spiritually, psychologically, we think it's mechanical. And so we develop a habit of self-improvement where we don't look for what's true. We don't listen for what's true. We look and listen for what we think will help us grow faster or better or more. And that keeps us perpetually discontented, perpetually looking outside of ourselves, perpetually trying instead of being. Well, for me, when I noticed that, when I heard Barb say that, when I heard Barb talk about that, it was just obvious to me that that was kind of nutty, and yet I'd been doing it most of my life. That I listen to shows like my own show, right? Or read something and think, oh yeah, how, this will help me get better. Which is very different than listening to a show like this, calling in to talk to a host on Hay House Radio, reading one of our books or a completely different book because you're fascinated by it. Because it intrigues you. Because you sense there's something cool there for you, because you enjoy it. Like, those are great reasons to do it. But if you think you're only here because it will make you better. See, I don't know that there's such a thing as a better person. You can do better at stuff, right? You can get better at tennis. You can get better at piano. You can get better at most things like that. But the idea that you can get better at being yourself, self-improvement, you can get a better self. See, I don't see that. I don't see that in the world. I see all of us doing the best we can, given the thinking we have that looks real to us, given the world we're walking in. And when we see through some of that thinking, when we see it for what it is, oh, that's not real, that's what it looks like to me. Well, then suddenly we are different, but we're not different because we're trying to be. We're just different because we're seeing clearer, so different things occur to us to do, different things make sense to us to do. In other words, it's organic. It's unintentional. It is as natural as a child growing up into an adult. Not as artificial as, you know, trying to build a character or build a personality the way that we build a boat or build a shelves for the living room. What if you were already improving? Like, just by being alive, you were growing, you were evolving, you were seeing clearly, more clearly over time, you were getting a better and better sense of how to be who you already are. Like, that's a title that I've used on numerous occasions because I really like the notion, how to be more of who you already are. See, now you can hear that through self-improvement ears. and go literally, okay, how do I do it? What are the 7 steps to being more of who I already am? Okay, step 1, figure out who I already am. Step 2, be more of it. Step 3, I don't know what step 3 would be, but you know what I mean? We think the habit of self-improvement would tell us, okay, there are steps and stages and things to do. Whereas if we just kind of see, hang on, I'm already an expression of the divinity of life, right? I am an expression of spirit taking form. Well, one of my colleagues, Jack Pransky, has a quote that I'm about to get wrong, but hopefully I'll get the gist of, which is that we are love and peace and the creativity that allows us to think that we're not. In other words, we are of God. We are of life. We are of spirit with the creativity, with the infinite creative potential to think that we're totally separate from it or that it doesn't even exist. So the question becomes, well, wait, which self am I supposed to improve? Am I supposed to improve on the infinite creative potential of the universe that I am at core? Am I supposed to improve on the oneness that I am a part of? Am I supposed to improve the ocean, or am I supposed to improve my wave, the wave that I am within the ocean? Like, have you ever noticed that waves and trees never come to Hay House seminars? Right? We sometimes try to bring the seminar to them, but they never buy tickets. Now, you can say that's because they're not human, but I don't think it is. I think it's because waves and trees don't think in terms of self-improvement. They somehow inherently, intrinsically recognize their perfection. It doesn't mean they don't grow and change. It doesn't mean they don't rise up and fade down. It doesn't mean that they aren't filled with life when they're filled with life and then just go back into the ether when they go back into the ether. It means it doesn't make sense to them to do anything about it. I'm a pine tree. Well, what are you going to do about it? What do you mean? Well, I've just been on this great seminar from pine tree to oak. And I think you ought to do it because, man, we've all got an oak tree inside us just waiting to come out. Well, look, if you're an insecure little pine tree, you might go, oh, gosh, yeah, boy, the oaks look mighty. I'm kind of weak, and I love the way they change their appearance with the seasons, and I always look the same. I mean, I've looked the same since I was little, you know, and anyways, it sucks being me because I get chopped down once a year, you know, to somebody to hang lights and tinsel on me. You know, I want to find my inner oak tree. Well, see, that's self-improvement, right? That's the notion that there, being somebody other than we are, being somehow different to how we are, is an improvement. No, it's different. But it also tends to be somewhat inauthentic. Right? Pine trees wearing oak tree disguises and gluing acorns to their branches are just pine trees with some weird stuff glued to their branches. And you, with lots of ideas about how to be a good person and trying to think loving thoughts about yourself and trying to, be kind to others and trying to take time to be creative each day and trying to whatever it is you are trying to do or be that you think will be better than whoever it is that you are and whatever it is that you're doing, well, that just is tiring. That doesn't make you better. It makes you busier. And it actually tends to make it harder to see who you already are, harder to experience yourself as pure spirit, as pure consciousness, as pure creative potential. So if you want to talk about this in relation to you, or in fact, if you want to talk about something completely different in relation to you, numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside of the U.S. and Canada, dial your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. So I want to talk a little bit about the habit part of the habit of self-improvement. So I've been talking about the self-improvement part. Well, the habit is we're just used to doing it, right? So it feels normal. It feels natural. Well, of course I'm working on myself. That's just what I do. That's who I am. Well, that's a little bit like saying, well, of course I pick my nose. I've always picked my nose. That's just who I am. Well, no, it's not who you are, and it's not a failure. It's just what you do habitually. And with thought, there are thoughts that occur to us habitually. Right? You may have habitual thinking about money, or you may have habitual thinking about relationships, or you may have habitual thinking about yourself. And whenever you think about yourself, the same kinds of thoughts come up. Whenever you think about money, the same kinds of thoughts come up. Whenever you think about relationships, the same kind of thoughts come up. Well, that doesn't mean they're true. That doesn't mean they're important. That just is what habitual thinking looks like. In the Path of Effortless Change, which is the video program that I did with Hay House. You can find it on Hay House University, but you can also find it on michaelneal.org. One of the analogies that I give early on is people think habits are hard to change. Yeah, you know, if it's a habit, you know, it's conditioned. You're going to have to put in 30 days. You're going to have to put in 21 days. You're going to have to put in 90 days to change the habit, blah, 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 blah. But the analogy I often give is if you've been driving to work the same way every day for years, it's how your father used to get to work or your mother used to get to work or wherever she went. And it's kind of, it takes an hour and there's always traffic or the trains are crowded and it's just not fun. It's not pleasant. And I show you a shortcut that'll get you there in 15 minutes through the park, but covered so that you don't even, you know, you don't even get wet if it's raining. How many times do I need to show you the shortcut before you start taking the new way? And everyone I have ever asked that question of goes once, though I might occasionally forget and go the old way. See, that's the truth of habits. We don't question our habits until they start looking silly. Like, as long as it looks like, well, no, this is the way to go. This is the only way to go. This is the best way to go. Of course, we're going to keep doing it. Happens all the time with worry. Worry was the first place where I noticed it as a coach, is people would come to me and they'd worry. And I'd say to them, hey, if I could wave a magic wand and make it so that you could never worry again, would you want me to wave the wand? And nobody ever said yes. They go, well, no. I mean, I want to worry less, but I don't want to never worry. But see, that's, to my mind, because worry still looks like a good idea. It looks like, well, if I worry, you see, then at least I'm going to stay safe. I'm going to keep alert. You know, if I worry, well, then, you know, that might motivate me to go take action. I just don't want to get so overwhelmed with worry. Well, again, an analogy I'll often use is think of worry as stabbing yourself in the leg with a fork, right? Well, boy, it wakes you up. Boy, it gets you, you know, it keeps you alert. Well, yeah, it probably does, but it's also kind of nutty, right? And if somebody said to you, hey, I don't want you to make it so that I don't stab myself in the leg with a fork. I just like to do it less often. You would kind of smile at them and think that they were kidding or that they were a little nutty. But you wouldn't think that was a good idea. You wouldn't think, oh yeah, good self-improvement project. Stab yourself in the leg with a fork less. Yeah, Me too. I'm going to do that. Because it's obvious to you, hopefully, that no good comes of stabbing yourself in the leg with a fork. But when it looks like your habits of self-improvement are good for you, well, of course, you're going to kind of stick with them. When it looks important, why would you not keep doing it? And so, as you wake up more and more to your own thinking, to your own habits of thought, they start just looking like, oh, yeah, well, I guess that is how it's always looked to me. But maybe that isn't the only way. Maybe that isn't even true. Maybe that never was. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to our friend Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Yes, hi, Michael. Not a question, more of a comment. I wanted to report in about the 90-day Creating the Impossible.
Sure.
I have about a week to go in the book, and I am okay to say that I have failed at my attempt, but I have learned a lot. I feel more at peace with myself from what I learned from the experience, and I would recommend it to anybody who wants to just do something cool and see what they can create. One of the things that I talked about previously when I told you I was starting reading it was I was complaining about not having a relationship or stuff like that. I, for some reason, figured I would try international dating, and I had a Russian pen pal for 2 months, and she was a very intelligent woman. She was fluent in English, so it made it easy to talk to. And we learned a lot about each other. And one of my self-published books is now in Moscow. So that was kind of an interesting result. And so I just wanted to thank you for that. And any kind of comments or what to do from here is appreciated. I think I want to repeat the process and see what I can continue to get out of it from doing something else, maybe.
Well, yeah. So I'll talk to it a bit, Dan, because first off, congrats on failing, because that means you actually did something. That's how you know.
Yeah. No. It was a successful failure.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. So what I've noticed over the years of running the program and in the just 6 months or so since the book came out is that we really believe that. Well, some things are possible and some aren't. Some things are worth trying and some things aren't even worth trying because they're never going to happen. And so consequently, we miss out on what is possible because we believe our own eyes. We believe our psychic abilities that we can predict the future, that we can in some way know before we start what it'll be like and whether or not it's worthwhile. And the more people engage in impossible projects, what I found is the more they realize, first off, there's nothing impossible. There's stuff that works out and stuff that doesn't. But also that whether or not something looks impossible is nothing to do with whether or not it can be done. It's to do with perception. It's to do with the mind. It's to do with habitual thought that looks real. And so if you've gotten sort of a sense of freedom and openness to possibility from doing it the first time, then absolutely dive back in. That's why it's a book. You can do it as many times as you want and see what comes. And ultimately, what you'll find is that while the form of the program is cool and is fun and it's, easy to follow, it's the spirit of it that lives on. That you start
to... The spirit
to,
that I'm getting...
Yeah. Go ahead.
The spirit that I'm getting from it is hanging out in the unknown.
Yeah. Yeah, and That's beautiful, Dan, because that's sort of the whole thing. We just did a program in London called Living Beyond the Known. And the whole notion was just, if you go 3 seconds past the known, if you're willing to let all the things you think you know go through your mind and wait 3 seconds past the last one. Something new will come to mind.
The whole process helped me to be more mindful. I feel quieter in my mind, and if a thought does arise, I'm like, well, do I want to entertain that? I mean, it's just a thought. I don't have to. I mean, I could ruminate on it if that's something I feel I want to do, but I don't have to. I can just sort of just let it go, and another one comes by, and I'm like, oh, that's fun to do. I'll make a video, and or I'll start another piece of artwork. And it gives me more of, for lack of better terms, control of what I am creating, because the entire process was creating. Whether I labeled it impossible or possible, it was possible to go through the process, and I just that's my summary, and I appreciate you taking my call, and thanks for your feedback. I look forward to listening to the rebroadcast so I can make sure I got everything that you said. So
beautiful, Dan. Thank you. You know, it's if you haven't read Creating the Impossible, I think at least in America you can still get the Kindle version for only like $2 this month. If you go on Amazon, I'm pretty sure that offer is on till the end of the month. If not, it's only like $10, but it grab one cheap while you can. And of course it's called Creating the Impossible, a 90-day program to get your dreams out of your head and into the world. Let's go to Melbourne, Australia, shall we, and speak with Helen. Hey, Helen, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. Love your work. And
Thank you. Really
appreciate you showing up every day, every time you do. It's gorgeous. And I've just mentioning the Creating the Impossible. I did the Creating the Impossible course last year. I think it's wonderful. And I do have the Kindle book as well. So it's a really great course.
Nice.
And, of course, I've done the advanced course twice. And I'm not on this one because it's at, the calls are at 2 o'clock in the morning. I just
don't
get to make them. So one of these days you'll
one of these days I'll just move to Australia and your life will be much easier. I know.
Absolutely. Can we do that? This is called Creating the Impossible, isn't it?
There you go.
Michael, I just wanted to, I think that the subject today is really interesting, self-improvement, because one of the things that becomes with the three principles is that you think that you will improve as a consequence of getting there, which is a bit disappointing, actually. But it's very seductive, isn't it? So I really, where I'm looking at these days is much more towards universal mind or oneness or essence. And I noticed that you've been writing to this a little bit more lately, and I just really wanted to kind of just talk to that a little bit more. How kind of you can kind of touch it and then it's gone again and you're back into, you know, everyday reality thought constructed, and it's kind of it's a hard one, that one. It's hard, seems hard to me.
Well, so part of what we're up against, most of what we're up against actually, is just the nature of the mind. Right? That we have this conceptual mind which can conceive of things. Literally, it can make them up. It can make up concepts. It can experience those concepts and debate those concepts and figure out concepts and try and understand things that way. And then there's a way in which we can use the mind, a way in which the mind works, where it's like a hotline to God, where what comes through is just a deeper signal from some place that is impersonal, that is before the personal or beyond the personal. And what it looks like to me, how I experience it, is that oneness only comes and goes in our personal reality, in our personal thinking. It can't come and go elsewhere in any other way, because it is the very ground on which we walk. It's like saying, yeah, you know, I've noticed through the day that the earth comes and goes. Well, it does. Like, experientially, it absolutely does. The earth was not here for me 2 minutes ago. It's very present for me right now. And I know it probably even before the end of today's show, it will have disappeared again. But not really. Mm-hmm. And knowing that means I don't have to worry about the earth. I don't have to worry about, yeah, but what if it really goes next time? I don't have to try and be mindful of the ground to walk on it. So I'm free to just be and get on with it, knowing that sometimes I'll notice it, sometimes I won't, because I know it's there. Mm-hmm. And that for me is at the heart of it. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering, I know it's not good, might sound a bit strange, but then can you relate that back to the subject today, which is self-improvement? I mean, can't frame the question. If we can have an awareness that is always there, the oneness is always there, that we are that, the formless to form, the infinite potential, then when we go back to the quest for, self-improvement, I want to lose, 5 kilos, I want to, make tons of money, whatever it is, whatever way we're trying to improve in this reality, like the conversation between those two, if that's the question.
Well, I'll speak to what I hear in it, and then you can kind of direct me as we go. But it seems to me that there is a fundamental difference between playing the money game because you want to play the money game. Like let's see how money works. Let's play with that. And thinking that getting better at making money will improve you as a self.
Right.
Improve your lot in life. Right? It's not that we're not supposed to do stuff or try stuff or have directions we want to travel or goals we want to reach. It's just seeing they don't fundamentally change who we are.
Mm.
We are the oneness. We are love and peace and the ability to create the illusion that we're not. That will always be true, no matter how good you get at making money, no matter how bad you think you are at making money, no matter how much you weigh, no matter how little you weigh, that doesn't change. There is no improving on the nature of things. But it doesn't mean that you can't play the games of life.
And maybe that is the way to, thank you, that's a really good distinction, because then you kind of go, well, you can't really improve on oneness. You can't improve on God. You can't improve on formless. Yeah. And the experience of life is the experience of life, whatever we're creating in the moment.
Yeah. So, like, can you make a better mousetrap? If we evaluate better by it catches more mice, sure. But that's not a self-improvement project. That's just making a better mousetrap.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So within that, the better mousetrap might be in terms of playing the game of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The better mousetrap analogy then is if you'd like more mice, humanely caught. And released into nature.
But absolutely, right? That's just something kind of, okay, that would be cool. Let's play with that.
Yeah.
But not because, see, and the thing is, when we take it off us, when it doesn't look to us like, yeah, if I could do that, that would prove that I've got it together. If I could do that, boy, who I would become in doing that would be amazing. Well, now we're stuck in our psychology. We're stuck in our separate self. We're stuck with it all being meaningful about us. We feel pressure. We feel stress because if we don't succeed, that means something about us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I play, I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about it, but I play golf badly, but I really enjoy it. And sometimes I play with these guys who've been playing forever. I don't get to play very much at the moment, so just being out there for me is a kick. But I sometimes play with guys who are out there every day. And they have so many games within the game. So many, like, okay, first to the green, get, you know, for a fiver. Okay, closest to the hole. Okay, worst shot. And they create all these things to try and make it interesting for them. Whereas for me, I'm often just going, can't we just play golf and then that would be fun? Well, it's the same. It's like if you kind of go out and you let's stick with you want to play with making money. Well, can't you just do that? Do you have to make it about, and then if I do that, it means I'm free. And then if I do that, it means I'm secure. And then if I do that, it means I'm great. Like that all just gets in the way.
Yeah. It does, doesn't it? The story gets in the way. But it's kind of it is quite seductive. Why do we go down that path?
Why do we do
that as humans?
I've got a colleague, Garrett Kramer, and we're actually about to do an event together in New York and New Jersey, which you can find on.
I love his work. Actually.
Well, yeah. So if you're in Australia, so probably not going to come up, but you're welcome to. we've got this event, Getting in the Game, and the performance principle that we're going to be speaking about next weekend, and one of the stories Garrett tells, because he works a lot with athletes. And he was approached by a general manager of one of the big National Football League teams here. And the guy said, well, if I hire you to coach my kicker, you know, the field goal kicker on the team, then, you know, what I expect is that you're going to make it so help him so that he's absolutely at his best every time he goes to make a kick. And Garrett said, well, no, actually, not at all. He said, I'm going to work with him till he can see that he is not 1 ounce better off making the kick than missing it. Now, the general manager totally freaked out and was like, well, that's crazy. Why would I hire you? And blah, 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 blah. But if you think about it, how much better would you play whatever games you're playing if you knew there was nothing on the line?
It's very special, isn't it?
There's so much freedom in it. So much freedom.
Yeah. And that's really the space, isn't it, to get to that place where there's nothing on the line.
It's to see. You see, now for me, the self-improvement version of it is to get to the place where. The reality of it is to just look and see, is there anything on the line?
Yeah.
Other than my own thinking about it. And if you see that there is, then okay, fair enough. But every time I look, I see that there isn't.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Nice to hear from you.
And you too. Thanks, Michael.
There's something so fundamental in that example to me. That, you know, I talk about it in the Inside Out Revolution is playing with the house's money. And I use the analogy of if I ran a casino and I knew that when people see other people having fun playing the games at the casino, they want to play more. And you're a good looking, charming person. So I'm going to offer you a job. Right. And your job is I want you to come in and I'm going to give you 50,000 in chips to play with for the night. And your job, what I want you to do is have fun gambling with that 50,000 in chips. And if you turn that 50,000 into 5 million, then at the end of the night, you turn it in and I'm going to give you $500. And if you lose all 50,000 at the end of the night, come by and I'm going to give you $500. Because you're playing with the house's money. Right? It doesn't mean anything whether you win or lose. It's just part of the fun of the game, right? You get a little dopamine hit every time you win. Well, see, anything that we want to take on as a project in life, because our essential nature can't get any better or worse. Because our aliveness can't go anywhere, because in the same way as the earth doesn't go anywhere when I'm not paying attention to it, I just don't notice it. Then you're already playing with the house's money. Because if you win whatever game you're playing, you make the extra money, you succeed at the project, you fall in love with the Russian girl and get married and live happily ever after, or not, you are still the infinite creative potential of the universe. You are still of God, of life, of spirit. You are still exactly who you are. Pure consciousness. Pure mind. Pure thought. It always makes me smile a bit when people kind of hear about this and take on this idea. Well, okay, what if I didn't have to keep working on myself? What if self-improvement wasn't a job? It was just a description of what happens to all of us as we kind of relax into life a little bit more. As people go, well, if I was just content, if I wasn't working on myself, then I would just sit on my porch and do nothing. I wouldn't, in fact, I might not even get to my porch. Why would I even get out of bed if I didn't have to? But see, that's a description of depression, not aliveness. That's a description of how life looks and feels to us when we're cut off from who we are. Not a description of how life is when we're filled up with who we are. When we're filled up with God, with spirit, with love, with life, with peace. Aliveness wants to take form. Life begets life. It's one of my favorite quotes from the actress, French actress Sarah Bernhardt. Life begets life. Energy begets energy. It is by spending oneself that one becomes rich. In other words, life wants to create. To all that's ever going on is nothing becomes something. The oneness becomes the many. The formless becomes form. And then at some point, the forms end or change or evolve and go back into the oneness. Like, that's just the nature of life. We are a temporary wave in a permanent ocean. We are a consolidation of life energy in a form. We were doing a call for the Getting in the Game program earlier today. And one of the things Jamie said, who's the third teacher in the group, is that, you know, people like to quote Teilhard de Chardin, I'm sure you've heard the quote, you know, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And I love that quote. I've used that quote. I think I used that quote in the Inside Out Revolution. But what Jamie pointed to is experientially, it's probably more true to say we are the oneness of life having 7.5 billion human experiences. It's just we get a little obsessed and preoccupied with the one that we identify with, the one that looks and sounds like us, as distinct to them. And you see it in kids. You see it in babies, particularly. Those of you who've had the chance to hang out with babies. Right? They're just in the oneness. They're just in the soup. It's one of the reasons that most people soften around them. Is you just feel the pull of pure love. You feel the beauty of it. But But then there's that stage where we teach them that they're separate. Dada, mama, baby. Dada, mama, baby. And we get so excited when they can do that, when they can see that they're not us, when they can see their separateness. And that's totally cool. That is how we seem to be made, that we individuate. We become a separate self. But if we get stuck there, if we think growth stops with the individuation of the self, we become obsessed with individuating ourselves even more. And okay, well, I'm this type and you're that type. I'm this sign and you're that sign. I'm this Enneagram and you're that Enneagram. I'm this Myers-Briggs and you're that Myers-Briggs. I'm the kind of person who, I'm not the kind of person who. Then we feel more and more separate. Doesn't make it more true, but we really feel different to everyone around us. And that, like, even that, that's cool. Unless you think that that difference is who you really are. That difference is just thought. It's the thought in you creating your separate reality and the thought in me creating my separate reality. But underneath that, we're made of the same ocean. I was teaching with my friend and colleague Dickon Bettinger last week, and he uses the analogy a lot of the ocean and the wave. And he points out that if you just said to a wave who was worried about improving his waveness or her waveness, look down. Just look down. See what you are made of. Then you'd worry so much less about what kind of wave you were and if you were a good enough wave, if you were a big enough wave, if you were a successful enough wave. And you would probably marvel at the immensity of the ocean. See, I grew up thinking humility was another word for shame, you know, and that a lack of humility was another word for arrogance. But there's a Sid Banks definition of arrogance and humility. Humility, again, I share in the Inside Out Revolution. He said, humility isn't thinking less of yourself. Oh, I suck. Oh, I'm terrible. Oh, I'm no good at this. Gosh, what a humble person they are. Humility is thinking of yourself less. Right? We get pretty occupied. We get pretty preoccupied. We get pretty obsessive about us. How am I doing? How does this affect me? Will this make my life better or worse? And to the extent that we think that that's who we are, of course we do that. And try to make that better, to improve that. But that's not you. That's not who you are. That's just a form you show up as sometimes. Who you are is beyond words. Who you are is beyond your psychology. Before your psychology, you were who you are. Before you even individuated, before you got your own psychology, your own way of thinking, your own way of being. And sure, you're also the separate self. You're also you. I'm also me. But not really. Right? It would be like saying, I am my jacket. Well, I wear this jacket all the time. Must be part of me. No, it really isn't. You could wear it 24/7 for 50 years and it wouldn't be you. It would be your jacket, your costume, your clothing. Well, the body is like that, right? We think we are the body. Well, no, even if we've had the same body for 50 years, or it's changed, like the jacket changes a bit after 50 years, right? Bits of it work better, bits of it not so well. Well, that's no more you for having been the vehicle, the recognizable form of you for 50 years or 70 years or 12 years or 20 years. It doesn't matter the time frame. Well, no. Okay. I get I'm not my body, but you know, but my mind, my, I am, you know, shy. I am an introvert. I am an extrovert. I am this. Well, no, that's an item of clothing, because sometimes you are, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you experience yourself that way, sometimes you don't. Sometimes other people experience you that way, sometimes they don't. So then the question becomes, who are you? If you're not your body, if you're not your thoughts, who are you? And I think it's a shame to answer that question in words. I am God. I am the infinite creative potential of the universe. I am love. I am peace. Well, you are, but not the concept of love, not the concept of peace, not the concept of God, not the concept of infinite creative potential. If you get a sense when you ask yourself, who am I? Who's asking? Who's listening to this show? Who's listening to the words? Who's talking? You'll get a felt sense. And if you stay with the feeling, that will give you everything you need to know. That will be your teacher. That will be your coach. That will be your guide. But if you try to get the words and be true to the words, well, that's like seeing somebody wearing a beautiful coat and marrying them because you love their coat. The coat's not them. The coat won't always look like that. But when you fall in love with that which is beyond the coat, well, you can be in love with that forever, because it's made of love, same as you. So we're to the end of time, not all time, just our time together. If you want to learn more, go to michaelneal.org. As I say, there's about 15 places left on the advanced course, and there's a bunch of just other cool programs, including Getting in the Game and the Performance Principle, coming up in New York. If you go to the events page, you'll get to read more. And of course, if you're not already subscribed, we have what a lot of people tell me is their favorite newsletter, the Caffeine for the Soul newsletter, which every Monday morning you get my sort of latest reflections and musings in the form of a blog and a podcast and a video and a quote. And you can just sign up for that at michaelneal.org. And you can also just go exploring on the site and see all the different bits. There's a video I think is available for free on the site about going beyond self-improvement. And you can also look for that. You'll find it in the My Stuff section when you sign up for the site. So that is all we have time for. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.